From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 16th installment in our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history and political economy of the USSR. And we go now to discuss the Spanish Civil War as a model of what to do and not to do, right?
Yep. So today we're going to talk about the Spanish Civil War. And in a way, it's going to link us back to the Soviet Union, the main topic of our discussion. The Spanish Civil War is the third example of fascism between the wars in Europe. We've done Italy, we've done Austria, and now we are in Spain. And before I start, I wanted to read a message I got from a Spanish internet friend. It's in Spanish, so I'll be translating. But it relates to something you said in a program some time ago when you sort of expostulated about that, for example, the Franco-fascism lasted until well after World War II. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so interestingly, this little message actually relates to that and also illuminates something I didn't know. So this Spanish person writes, "My uncle, who was a great hero, anti-fascist, suffered a great deal, a heroic figure, this uncle," he says, the nephew, "my uncle always considered the Americans and the English as traitors for failing to comply with the Yalta Accords." Mm. "In those accords, it was decided to eliminate all of the fascist regimes in Europe, and especially that of Franco." And that would have been Stalin's emphasis, you know, mm-hmm. or maybe even FDR, something to look into.
Right.
He says, "but with the Cold War, this elimination of the fascist regimes was no longer a priority."
Mm.
So apparently they had agreed at the Yalta with FDR and that idiot Churchill.
Truman.
That these would go out, but they didn't. And we know why, because they were anti-communist.
Yeah.
All right. So I have to go into a little bit, but very briefly, of the history from 1931 to the actual civil war in Spain, the events. So, and what I was going to say. Actually, what we're seeing all the time is the weakness of democracies in the bourgeois democracy being very weak before the brunt of fascism. So what we have in Spain in 1931 is the declaration of the Second Republic, of the Second Spanish Republic, and that's second because there was something in 1873, 1874, 1 year, and the Republic would be a rejection of the monarchy. So we have the Second Republic in Spain from 1931 to 1939, the end of the Civil War. And that republic was parliamentary bourgeois democracy with presence in the parliament of left parties. And we have three phases in this Second Republic from 1931 to 1939. We have the first 2 years, 31 to 33, which is called the biennium, the Republican Socialist Biennium, with very moderate reforms of land, education, some attempts to moderate the influence of the church in schools, etc. You know, sort of very mild. But in 1933 and through 1935, we have the Black Biennium, that is the reaction of the, let's call them conservative parties, which I always call reactionary. with these reforms upset the reactionaries, and so we have the intrusion into the government of the Catholic Right, which actually form a confederation. It was called the Confederación Española de Derechas Autónomas. That would be Spanish Confederation of Autonomous Rights. The SEDA, I'm going to refer to as the SEDA.
And, you know, this
and
is
they intended to rectify the reforms.
Yeah, this is interesting, too. I mean, we think about, we've discussed the Austro-fascism, the period prior to the Pan-Germanic trend. In other words, the native Catholic Austrian fascism, and of course Italy, the home of the Vatican, and, the center of Catholicism. Now you have
a
little
group. In 1928, Mussolini formed a concordat with the Church,
right?
With the Vatican, giving it state status,
right?
Recognizing it as a state and giving enormous benefits to it.
Right,
the Vatican claimed, did I say this last time, in order to support Mussolini's fascism, which was important because that way Mussolini could control the religious masses,
Right.
He needed them. And so the church would deliver them if the Italian state would compensate the Vatican for the loss of all of central Italy. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. It's amazing. And I think about the global picture as well. I'm thinking of my grandparents, for example, both of my paternal grandparents and my maternal grandfather, Roman Catholics, Italians here in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That would influence. That's right.
For sure.
Long arm of the Vatican, indeed.
Yeah.
And so this SEDA, this Catholic Rite, which was called the Black Biennium by the left. And so between 1933 and 1935, the intention to rectify the reforms, which were secular reforms, you see, that's what was threatening the church. So what they wanted was an affirmation. They were for an affirmation and defense of the principles of the Christian civilization. And they wanted a revision of the Constitution, of the Republican Constitution, in this key. So the SEDA saw itself as a defensive organization formed to protect religion, family, and property, a church. During these 2 years, something tremendous happened, and that was the insurrection, the anarchist but also socialist insurrection in Asturias, which was a mining country, of 1934, which was considerable and was an authentic social revolution with taking over of factories and sort of attempt to form Soviets, but it was suffocated with the intervention of the army. Now, we're talking about, there is a Republican state in power, but it's got a right-wing predominance in the parliament, and so we see in this Spain, as this Republican Spain, and this, which is, we see that the army is sent to suffocate a social revolution. Now, the third stage of this republic, the Second Republic in Spain, was the triumph of the coalition of the left, which we know as the Popular Front. And that happened in the elections, in the general elections of 1936. This Popular Front could actually govern in peace for only 5 months because the coup of July of 1936, promoted by a part of the army, occurred and opened the Spanish Civil War. So the actual Frente Popular Front had only 5 months of peace before the army rebelled and Franco came from with whatever, the Baleares, no, the Azores, the Morocco, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was out of Spain.
Yeah.
Now this, you know, this war, I think principally was between fascism and communism, even though this was a republican state, supposedly. So it had many fronts. It was a class war, it was a religious war, it was a war of nationalisms, of opposing nationalisms.
Yeah, it was personal. It was personal, too. You had Sanjurjo, you had Franco and Mola. I mean, there were, you know, some generals that all thought they should be in charge, and one of them dies in a plane crash in the middle of this invasion in July.
Yeah, and I think it must be noted, you know, where I'm going, where I want to go, is to compare apples and pears, to compare what happens to a state that's attacked by fascism that doesn't have a solid center, like the Soviet Union did.
Right.
And a state that is so weak, I would say. You know, I want to, we'll see, I'll proceed. I'll just, you know, summarize what the Republican side was made up of. So the Republican side was the elected government, the so-called democratically elected government, and which was formed as the Popular Front, so that it had a coalition of Republican parties. And to these Republican parties, Democratic, were added the Communist Party of Spain. I guess it was the Marxist-Leninist of the Communist Party of Spain, which wasn't very large. Okay. And the PUM, what I call the PUM, the P-O-U-M, Partido Obrero Unido Marxista, I think. So, Workers' Party of United Marxists. Now, this party defined itself as a revolutionary Marxist, and it was in opposition of Stalinism. So you can see it opposed Stalinism, what they called Stalinism.
Yeah, it was formed by a fusion of the Trotskyist communist left of Spain and the workers and peasants bloc, which was right, and with the right opposition. And supposedly Trotsky opposed the affiliation with the right opposition. And George Orwell served with that party's militia.
Yes,
and it helped form his quote unquote anti-authoritarian ideas in his later life.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's right. The PUM had supposedly broken from Marxism, from Trotsky at a certain point, but I don't have enough information about it. Do you? I don't know.
We don't have to go that deep into it. They're the Trotskyists. Okay, next.
Yeah, I mean, they were formed as Trotskyists.
Right.
Now, we have to remember that this is 1936-37, and
right.
We have to remember what's going on in Moscow, too.
And in Europe. Germany is a couple of years away from invading the Soviet Union, and Trotsky and Trotskyists everywhere are more opposed to Stalin than anybody in the world. That should tell you just about everything.
That's right. And this, it was close to the left opposition of the Russian... The left opposition in Russia, meaning Trotskyism.
Right.
So we're talking about a party of the left, of the communist left, supposedly, but not Stalinist. So the PUM, as I call him, criticized the degeneration, the bureaucratic and totalitarian degeneration of the Russian Revolution. Now, we have to remember that at this point, the USSR was the only source of arms for this republic.
That's right.
France and England blockaded. They were neutral.
Right.
There was, meanwhile, the Italians, fascists, and the Nazis were going to launch their whole gizmo, their whole...
They're on the move, yep.
Toys, over Spain.
Yeah.
And so the PUM was anti-Stalinist.
Because what's interesting, you have, quote-unquote, a popular nationalist uprising that suddenly has an air force, for example, that was manufactured in Germany. You have a blockade, essentially, of goods by sea with German submarines. So the Spanish government is isolated. No one's taking a stand with it other than, essentially communists and other workers from around the world. And you have the fascists inside Spain, openly supported by Germany and Italy, and tacitly supported by the United States and Great Britain and France by allowing the rest of this to happen under their nose.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to say, and I'm interrupting all this, but... I think that the Spanish Civil War was a test for the Western democracy to see whether the Soviet Union could be beaten by Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they derived the wrong conclusions,
mm-hmm.
that it was weak, that it could not organize, when in fact the organization... that the Soviet Union provided, the advisors, the senior officials, experienced army, etc., that it provided, was continuously subverted by the PUM.
Not for nothing, and just very mischievously, and I'll just make the statement and drop it. I wonder what lesson they're drawing from getting their behinds beat in Syria right now by Russia.
That's right.
So let's go on.
So we have this anti Stalin party and allied to the Republic, and so far it will be thrown out of the game after Barcelona, and we'll concentrate on Barcelona eventually. We'll go to Barcelona because that's where actually the Stalinist Trotskyist ideologies will work out.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Out.
Yep. And perhaps we're seeing them work out there today. But go ahead.
And so the PUM was the only party that condemned the trials of Moscow in their periodical La Battaglia, the battle.
The battle was with the Soviet government. Okay.
Yeah.
That should tell you something also.
It was a proxy war between the Trotskyists and Spain, and this is never much emphasized,
right.
Because we have, I think, Orwell's version, very romanticized version of homage to Catalonia. But Catalonia was not as revolutionary or as red as Asturias, and it wasn't even as red as Madrid.
That's correct.
You know, so the accusation right. that Madrid is Francoist and Catalonia is all, this is all bullshit.
Yeah, and yeah, so, you know, we're covering a lot, and so we've got about 8 minutes left to, I think we'll cover what we can, and then we'll pick it up next week instead of rushing, because this is, in my opinion, what happened in Spain, and I believe this is your opinion also from you know, the notes back and forth earlier, from what you've been posting at Facebook. And by the way, I encourage people to go to your Facebook page, Luciana Bohne, it's LuciannaBohne at Facebook, because of some of the stuff you post. You do so much reading and parsing and all of that. But what happened in Spain, the Spanish Civil War, in my opinion, is extremely relevant to the politics of what's happening right now in the United States. And so I think, and rather than what people tend to do on the left and say, okay, well, that's what they did, so this is exactly what we have to do. No, there's a methodology that was applied to the understanding of things at that time, and a methodology that needs to be developed to do it here.
Yes.
So, but go ahead. So, okay, so we'll take our time and go through it. And if it runs into next week, c'est la vie. So we've got now 7.5 minutes.
all right. So the PUM actually complicated relation. The PUM's enmity toward Moscow complicated relations of the Republic with the Soviet Union,
right.
Which was providing weapons and you know, war supplies. So this was really a problem.
Yeah, I mean, what you have for people to you know, sort of just get it in a nutshell, you've got an elected government that has the support, it's a left-of-center government, it has the support of much of the left, against a fascist, literally a fascist coup being undertaken by the generals. And, you know, among the left, there are, and the only people on the outside that are willing to help the government is the USSR. And inside the assembled popular groupings supporting the government is this PUM, which openly advocates the overthrow of the Soviet government, in essence,
yes.
which, of
yes,
course,
right.
would complicate it. So what you have is a fifth column, basically, inside the support for the government that, in essence, is supporting the fascist coup by making support for the government problematic for the USSR.
That's right. And there's more. So we've got this poem that we talked about that will come back again because, the stage will be Catalonia.
Right.
And then the government, the Republican government also has the trade unions, and in the trade union in Catalonia especially are anarchist. In fact, the biggest force in the trade union called the CNT, that's the Congreso Nacional de Trabajadores or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's not get lost on this. So, in addition to the PUM, you have the syndicalist parties, and most of them are, the CNT is the biggest one, and it is anarchist. And then there is the UGT, which is socialist. And so these are the left parties within the Republican, the PUM, the UGT, which is trade union, the CNT, which is the anarchist trade union. And what these wanted was to, within this attack by fascism, they wanted to carry out the social revolution. Within this attack, they also want to overthrow the Republican government, which receives arms from the Soviet Union.
Right.
And establish a workers' revolution. And this is Trotsky.
Right. So here's what you have. At the moment, you start out with, say, you know, one unit. as the resistance to this coup, which is the United Front, consisting of bourgeois elements, social democrats, socialists, communists, your grandmother, whomever. And what these people want to do, in the midst of that, they want to separate from that and follow some purist line where they stand alone. And plus, they have no help from the Soviet Union because that's already been promised to the government. So what they're doing is basically splitting the resistance to the fascists.
Right. And, you know, what happens is they have to steal the arms from the Soviet Union.
Right.
Delivery to the Republicans, and the Soviet Union demands the outlaw of the POOM, which eventually happens.
Right.
It becomes, you know, so this is how not to fight fascism, by having the revolution, the Soviet Union, in the middle of a fascist attack. But this is pure Trotsky.
Right.
He was cheering the fascist invasion of the Soviet Union because that would give the opportunity to overthrow Stalin and establish. Can you imagine how nutty this is?
Yep. Yep.
No, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I
feel exactly the same way. It is insanity, facially.
Yeah.
If you look at strategy, if you were going to conquer a playground at the elementary school, you would give it more thought than this apparently is given, because the last thing that you do in the middle of a battle is split up your forces and or declare war on them, your own forces.
Yeah. I mean, so you will see, they will take over everything and they won't be able to function anyway. So allied to the Republicans were also the Nationalist Party of the Basque National Party, because in 1931, the Republican Parliament gave Basque country autonomy, a state of autonomy. So even the church, that was the only church in Spain that sided with the Republicans, and it was the Basque Church, and those priests were severely, the clerics were severely persecuted by Franco afterwards.
Yeah.
Let's call it the fascist side, that is the subverters, that is the National Front, was organized around the military, the army, with Francisco Franco at the head as generalissimo y jefe del gobierno de Estado, as the chief, the duce.
Right.
Now, politically integrated into the, what you call it, the fascists, was the Falange, the monarchists, but the church, of course, and the Seda, all those who voted for the Seda.
Right. I'm going to interrupt here because we're out of time. But just on this note, that there was a whole collection of various tendencies within that grouping. And for some reason, they were able to function as a unit and win while the left was busy eating each other. And we're going to pick it up next week and start analyzing that phenomenon. Thank you, Luciana, very much.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As we mentioned at the head end of this broadcast, this was the 16th installment in the conversation that we've had with Professor Luciana Bohn about the history of the USSR. We felt it was particularly timely, given the fact that it's been 100 years this month since what was called the Great October Revolution. And if you would like to hear some of the earlier broadcasts, you can go to our website, communitypublicradio.org, and there will be a link to archived newscasts. You click on that and go back and look, they're generally aired on Wednesdays, going back 15 weeks from this week. We will also post, at some point in the near future, an aggregate list of the elements of this series. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.